starter twice in one series. That's hit well to right field. Garcia is back. He is all the way back, and that is gone. That's the first time all year that Ryan Stanek has given up runs as a starter.
How about those Royals? That was game one yesterday of two, and then game two, as the Royals win game one 3-2. Game two, they pile it on the reigning American League Cy Young winner, Blake Snell, as Glenn Sparkman outduels Blake Snell.
And that is hit deep into the right field corner, slicing and off the pole. Kelvin Gutierrez against Blake Snell. It's his first major league home run.
I gave the Royals a 3-0 lead in the first, go on to win 8-2. Ned Yost talking about his pitchers in game one, Ian Kennedy for two innings of relief.
Ian, you know, being new to relieving, I knew there was no way I was going to be able to use him in both games. I can use Diekman in both games. I can use just about all of them in both games. But Ian, not so much. So my mindset was, he was going to pitch two and get us through it.
Then game two, Glenn Sparkman, a nice start.
He really had everything going for him today, but he was on the attack. He was confident. He was efficient with his pitches. It was just an outstanding day for him.
So, you know, it's pretty predictable. Sparkman outduels Snell. The Royals sweep a doubleheader from the Tampa Bay Rays, the best team in the American League. And the Royals, that's the first time they've swept a traditional doubleheader in 11 years. I was young last time they did this. September 13th, 2008, 10 and a half years ago, was the last time they swept a traditional doubleheader. Man. And yes, they do it against the best team in the American League.
I just turned 25 when that happened.
Yeah, that's when your insurance went down, right? Because you hit 25. Oh, my. So we'll talk more about the Royals. Some interesting news coming out about the Chiefs today, which is it's good news for once. That's coming up. And then some weird news involving Patrick Mahomes. Plus, the AL Central, we talked about how the Indians are the team to beat. They suffer a huge, huge setback last night. We'll explain. Plus, the NBA playoffs continuing last night, and the NHL playoffs are continuing as well. Local sports to Dusty.
Yes, today, local schedule, kind of a short schedule today, but there are some events going on. Ellenwood and baseball and softball teams are both going to be in Lincoln County today. Lincoln Sylvan Lucas baseball team hosting Ellenwood at 4 o'clock this afternoon with a doubleheader in Lincoln. Sylvan Lucas Lincoln softball team, that's at Sylvan Grove at 4 o'clock this afternoon hosting Ellenwood. Also, the Beloit golf team is at the Ellsworth Invitational this afternoon beginning at 3 o'clock. So that's what's going on in local sports here today. We did get a notification yesterday from Beloit High School about 3A regional baseball semifinals and championship games. They were originally scheduled to be in Beloit on Wednesday, May 15th, but they have been moved due to concerns about the field conditions there at Bill Foreman Field in Beloit. Beloit Athletic Director Kyle Beisner did tell us that the field has not recovered from the rough winter that they had, so they wanted to make sure they had fields worthy of playing regional championships and semifinals on, so they're going to move those to the Concordia Sports Complex. Again, still on Wednesday, May 15th, for the semis and championship. First-round games of the tournament will all be held at the higher seed, just like they normally would be. But it's an unfortunate situation there that's kind of out of the hands of Beloit. So they'll move that over to Concordia for regional baseball on May 15th.
I've played on that field with our K-18 team. We've had practice or two over there. And what I would really like to see is they go ahead and plow under the infield. Just plow it.
Yeah.
Level it out, make it all dirt, or I don't know, if you come up with some funds, find some grant money, and put a field turf just on the infield.
Yeah.
Because that, our kids are scared of trying to pick up a ground ball because it kicks all over the place.
Yeah.
I was hitting grounders to them a couple weeks ago, and I can't control. I mean, it just bounces all over the place. We were watching a high school game the other night, and third baseman was playing perfectly and the ball hit something, bounced over his head and in the outfield. So I would say that the weather, the muddy fields, the conditions, that's one thing, and perhaps the weather has made that worse on the infield. I don't know, but it's pretty bouncy to say the least.
Yeah.
It takes weird kicks, and that's not what you want to see when you come regional and state time, whether the weather has done that to the field and made it worse than it was last year. I don't know. I didn't play on it last year. But I do know when we were in the Pee Wee State Baseball Tournament up in Belleville last year, they had two fields, and one was in great shape, and the other one was not.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a center fielder come up on a ground base hit up the middle, and it was, he was playing it perfectly, and the ball hit something or a hole, whatever, I don't know what, it, and kicked and bounced over his head twice in that game. Now, that's not the type of conditions you want for state peewee baseball or regional high school baseball or state baseball. So I applaud Beloit for, you know, contacting Cation saying, hey, we have some concerns here, because the selfish thing to do would be for Beloit to say, listen, we're going to take it no matter what. We earned it. And, yeah, there'll be some bad bounces and who cares? And we'll get people to come in and spend money in our town, this and that. But the right thing to do is, listen, this field is not in the best condition in regards to having regional competition here. And so let's go ahead and see what our options are, which the options Concordia. So I think it's a great move by Beloit, because I can, you know, can you imagine game comes down to a wild hop or something bad in the field conditions, and people, you know, take care of that field the best they can, but you can only do so much, especially if it's rained a lot or it's muddy, or if you just got a field that's got a whole bunch of bumps and whatever else, and the grass doesn't grow properly, and you know how it is. I mean, you just go out in the yard, and you could, you know, unless you're going to sod it, which would be the other thing I guess you could do, and that sodding is extremely expensive to maintain. I think you'd be better off just putting field turf on the infield instead of sod, don't you think, long term?
Probably for high school, financially, yeah.
Now, Concordia has that brand new field turf football field, which is, by the way, beautiful and awesome. Beloit has a really great grass field there, and it drains really well. And they, of course, ripped that all up, put in new a couple of years ago, and that's one of the better grass fields that you have out there. But I do wonder if, and I don't know if Southeast, what they're going to do. They're tearing up their football field because it was a mess last year. I think they're going to redo their track, too, because that was not in good shape. But I know that they're tearing up, ripping up the football field. I haven't seen anything that they're going to field turf or they're laying better sod or what. But I will say this. It is an extremely expensive, I would imagine, endeavor to have field turf in a football field. But at the same time, I would think long-term it would save you. I would think long-term it would save you. But now, I still think football should be played on grass, and if it gets muddy, this and that. But that's harder to maintain, too. So, I'm sure people are like, well, I'll just get field turf. Concordia's got field turf. Why don't everybody just have field turf? Well, first of all, you know, how many times do you play on that field? Is it worth that much money?
Yeah.
You know, and do you invest up front for something that costs quite a bit, but yet long term might be the better way to go about it? Those are decisions to be made by the people that are in charge of the finances of the schools, the superintendent, the school board, and everything else. Yeah. And people present the different options. But, you know, would Lakeside be wise to have field turf at a small school like that? I would say probably not. Probably not. And the reason being is not to scare anybody out there, but you don't want to spend a whole bunch of money long term on a field turf if you don't know if your school's going to be open 10 years from now. And, you know, we've heard the rumors. There's been things out there for small schools. We've seen all the consolidations and mergers. You know, even though it would probably long-term be the right idea financially, but you don't know, you know, 10 years from now, if you'll be a consolidation or merged, you'll be shut down or whatever the financing situation will be. Whereas if you're in Concordia, I think you're pretty solid. Your school's going to be open 10 years from now. Beloit, I think you're pretty confident you're going to be open 10 years from now. So there, it might not be a bad idea to invest in field turf or go the grass route or sod it. That's up to those people. But man, it is the right move to not have those games, regional baseball in Beloit. I agree with that decision, and I'm glad that they took the high road on that, because I think there are some people in some administrations that would have basically said, the heck with everybody. We don't care about the bounces of the ball and the conditions of the field. As long as they can play on it, they can play on it, and we're going to take it.
Yeah.
You know?
A lot of schools would do that, especially when you get lower and lower in size. You know, like some of these places might not have another option, too, so you might have to do it.
Right.
You know, say you're a 2-1A school hosting like Spearville or something. We'll just throw that out there.
Sure, right.
And there's nothing else around you unless you want to go all the way to Dodge City or, you know, an hour away, or, you know, 45 to an hour away. I mean, that might be your only option, but at least, you know, Beloit was seeking out options to see if they could do something different, and they did it.
They were proactive.
But yeah, I think a lot of schools would just be like, whatever.
Yeah.
We've got it. You're coming to play no matter what the conditions are.
Yeah, I think so. I applaud Beloit for taking, I think, the high road on that one and doing what's right. Okay, the Royals did things right yesterday. They sweep a doubleheader. They win the opening game, as we said, 3-2 over the Rays. Jacob Junis, 6 1/3, gave up 6 hits, 2 runs. Jake Diekman, who's been pitching a lot better, the former Cloud County guy, he's been pitching a lot better out of the bullpen lately. The Royals, Alberto Mondesi with the home run, a 2-run homer. He's on pace to put up some ridiculous numbers this year. You look at the Royals, Whit Merrifield's having a really good year. Mondesi's having a very good year, and he's only 23. Gordon has figured out something. He's playing as good as he's played in probably 3 or 4 or 5 years offensively. Dozier's smacking the ball. And, you know, Soler is kind of a feast or famine type of situation, but he can hit the ball a mile. I mean, they got 4 or 5 guys in their lineup that have really hit the ball well and been good offensively the first month of the season, and yet they're still on 11-20. And then the bottom of the order is really bad. I mean, the 7, 8, 9 guys are just really, really bad. Chris Owings, I don't understand why he even plays, but that guy's been bad. And Maldonado's been good defensive catcher, but there's no pop. He's hitting 171. So yeah, that's where you miss Salvi. That's where you miss Salvi so much. You know, Maldonado and Perez's defense are comparable, but you miss Salvi's 27 homers and 80 RBIs. And yeah, he'd ground in some double plays. But Maldonado, Owings, you had Gore playing left field in place of Gordon in the second game yesterday. Of course, Gore isn't going to hit the ball that hard usually. What's the deal with Gore? He comes in to pinch run and gets picked off. You have one job, man, and he comes in and gets picked off at second. And then he stops. I saw Hudler on the TV broadcast. He stops. It's like, just run through it, because that'll allow the next runner to move up 90 feet. Instead, he just stops and tries to backpedal, and then Hamilton has to stay at first. I mean, Gore has one main job. The main reason he's on this roster is to steal bases and be smart when you come in. He's been picked off 3 times in the last 2 weeks. I'm telling you, if you can't do that right, why is he on the team?
Yeah,
Bubba Starling. Let's bring Bubba Starling up. Bubba Starling's hitting .333 in the minors right now. He's off to a really good start. I would rather see Bubba Starling up here than Terrence Gore. If Terrence Gore is going to continue to get picked off. Now, if Terrence Gore is going to, you know, come in and play great defense and start once a week, and he's going to be a pinch runner and he's actually going to steal bases, or at least not get picked off, I can at least deal with it. Although I've never agreed with taking a whole roster spot for a one-dimensional player.
No.
And I mean specifically one-dimensional. Like could argue Alex Gordon's been a one-dimensional player for the last 3 years, but at least he has occasional get some hits, does this. He isn't dumb on the base paths, and that's what it was yesterday. I mean, Gore, I mean, come on, that was ridiculous. And luckily they didn't come back to bite the Royals. So the bullpen was pretty solid. Kennedy's been fantastic, which, you know, I kind of thought he'd be good in the bullpen because he has multitude of pitches. And you think about how many times did Kennedy, when he was a starter with the Royals, he'd go through the first time through the lineup and do just fine.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, second, third time, it wasn't so great. He'd go about 5 1/3. He's the perfect guy to pitch 2 innings and be a two-inning closer, to be quite honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem is then you can't usually go back-to-back nights. And he's not really situated to do that right now. They're still acclimating him to the position. So game one goes to the Royals. And game two, they're 26th man. You don't know how that works. You have a doubleheader, you can call up a 26th man for your roster. Glenn Sparkman was that guy. He can't play in the first game, but he can play in the second game. And he was terrific. Retired 10 of the first 11 batters that he faced. He was notified Tuesday he would get the start. Didn't arrive in Kansas City until 1 a.m. yesterday morning from Nashville, where AAA Omaha was playing. So he's probably a little bit tired, but, man, he got it done. Soler had a key RBI double, and you heard Gutierrez with his first Major League Baseball home run. And the Royals get the job done. Jumped all over Blake Snell early, 3-0, and they win 8-2. So the boys in blue sweep 2, a doubleheader for the first time since September of 2008 against the best team in the American League. It's exactly how we drew it up.
Yes.
Weather helped us out.
I went into that day thinking that the Royals were going to sweep this thing and we're going to go and try to win the series today.
Dusty put $1,000 on each game yesterday and absolutely just killed it.
Yeah, I would have absolutely killed it if I actually would have done that.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm guessing I would have won more than $2,000 if I put $1,000 on each.
Right. Right. So here's some information. John sent me this. Now, this is not hard numbers. These are not official numbers. It's just somebody sending me numbers. It costs around $30,000 a year to maintain a grass football field. It would probably depend on your football field, how much care you put into it. Those numbers could you know, be a little bit different than that. But let's just go with it. Costs around $30,000 a year to maintain a grass football field. It costs a little over $300,000 for turf to install once. Okay, well, here's the thing. If it costs you $30,000 a year to maintain a grass field, and that football field can last you 10 years, it's a wash. The field turf. But here's the thing. What's the life expectancy for high school turf? 20 years, according to what John sent me. So if you're pretty confident your school's going to be in business and you're going to be playing football for 20 years, based on the numbers that this person sent me, if it takes $30,000 a year to maintain a grass football field, it costs $300,000 to put in a field turf football field. If it lasts 20 years, you have saved yourself $300,000.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure there's probably some...
field turf lasts as long as the regular football field does. Right. So if you're, it depends on how much pressure and wear and tear you're putting
on it.
Right,
how much you put, how many events you have on it.
There's not going to be as many... Because most of those schools that have that field turf probably aren't going to practice on it.
Yeah.
They're probably going to find some different place to practice.
Right.
So they're not wearing it down quicker than they need to.
So based on those numbers, if you think a field turf will last more than 10 years, it would be better to go with field turf.
Yeah.
If you think it's going to last just 10 years, then you can do either way. If you think it's going to last less than 10 years, then you probably should go with a grass football field. Although I would think that if you spend that much money on a turf field, you probably got to have some kind of warranty or guarantee, guarantee of some kind that it's going to last at least 10 years. Otherwise, why would you do it? So those are just roundabout numbers. There might be more specific numbers. Maybe some people would disagree with those numbers. I don't know. That's coming from John. And, yeah, but if you don't know if your school's going to be around in 10 years from now, then it would probably be silly to put field turf in. And like you said, how many events are you going to have? You know, you have track and field meets. People are running around on the field turf, yeah, like I saw in Concordia for a junior high track meet. That's a little bit of wear and tear. Are you going to practice on it? That's another one. You know, if Beloit got field turf, you'd have eight-man all-star games on it, which is just two games a year. But, you know, that's still a little more wear on it. You know, how much maintenance goes into field turf? And, you know, is there much maintenance?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that.
The thing is, you wouldn't. I mean, you're not paying somebody to mow it,
right,
and keep that up.
Sure.
You know, that's
don't have to water it.
You don't have to water it, but
right,
there's something that there's probably things you got to do.
Sure, there. Sure there is.
But there's not. It's low maintenance compared to a grass field.
What about the weather impact on the field turf and colder the winter? You know, the summer. I don't know all those details, but if you break it down simple numbers like John did there, he's basically saying, it probably long-term is better to go with turf based on the numbers he gave me, if those are accurate. So just a little tidbit there to finish follow up on that conversation. I'm not saying one should do the other. I'm just saying those are options, and I'm sure many schools have looked at it. Concordia decided to go field turf, and we'll see how long that field turf lasts and everything else. But, boy, it looks beautiful. It looks
ideally,
awesome.
If you could get one of your kids to be an NFL superstar someday.
Uh-huh, yeah. Jordy Nelson?
Terrence Newman.
Yeah, Terrence Newman, George
Nelson. Solana Stadium field turf was pretty much donated by Terrence Newman.
Yeah.
So if you can get somebody to be an NFL star, that you might be able to get them to donate that to you, that'd be perfect.
Well, let's work on that.
You don't have to worry about it.
Let's work on that, right? Let's work on that. All right, Royals complete their four-game set against the Rays. They've won two of the first three, sweeping doubleheader yesterday. Danny Duffy, his second start of the year, will go up against Charlie Morton, who, of course, was fantastic with the Astros a few years ago in the World Series. The Rays are still 19-11 despite getting swept yesterday. That's a 1:15 first pitch at the K. By the way, yesterday there was like nobody at the stadium. You watch the TV broadcast, you could hear the managers and people and the players yelling the words, which is sad, but at the same time, in fairness, that was supposed to be an evening game last night.
Exactly.
And that was it. And then the night before, it got rained out. So then they had to, what they ideally would have done is probably a 3:15 game and followed by the 7:15 game. But there was weather coming in last night. They wanted to beat the rain. So what they had to do was they moved up the 7:15 game to as soon as the first game's over. So they started the first game of doubleheader at 12:15, and then the second game was like 30 minutes after that, so they could have it all done before the evening, both games, and get them in before the weather came into Kansas City. Now, as a result, obviously on a Wednesday afternoon, last moment situation and change, people have responsibilities. They have kids in school. They have work. You know, this isn't happening when school is out. People have jobs, and so it's understandable there weren't many people in the stands yesterday. A friend of mine and I, we went to a Royals game a few weeks ago on a Thursday afternoon, 12:15 first pitch, and I would tell you there was probably 6,000 people there, and it was chilly, and yesterday was chilly. And so, and school is in session, and it's a 12:15 out of 1:15 start. There weren't a lot of people there, which was great for us because we could just sit wherever we wanted. And yesterday, you could have got a foul ball and could have taken 2 minutes to get to it, and you would have still got the foul ball. Yeah. So it looks really sad, but you need to keep in mind the situation. I saw some national baseball writer put a picture of it. So I've never seen this few people in a major league ballpark in my life. I'm like, well, you got it.
You see, didn't see that Baltimore Orioles White Sox game then.
Which they blocked people from because of rioting, which I just, that was on the state in history a few days ago. But, you know, you got to, I just don't like when people report things like that because you that's misinformation.
Yeah.
It's totally misinformation.
Tell us the story.
I mean, tell us the story that game wasn't supposed to start at 12:15. There wasn't supposed to be a 12:15 game, and there wasn't supposed to be a game at 3:30 either. It didn't make that decision until, what was that, late Tuesday afternoon.
About 4:30 on Tuesday.
It was late Tuesday afternoon. So, and then I saw somebody that was arguing with the person in charge of the Royals scheduling on Twitter, arguing and saying that that game was supposed to be at 3:15, arguing the start time. And Mike Swanson, who's part of the scheduling for the Royals, is like, "It's look at your pocket schedules, look at our website. It was never an afternoon game. It was an evening game." And this guy just kept arguing. I'm like, "Dude, what are you arguing about? You don't know what you're talking about." "Well, some little app told me it was this time." Well, your app was wrong.
Yeah, they
okay?
were incorrect.
Oh, my goodness. People sometimes just argue to argue. All right. So the Royals trying to gain on the Cleveland Indians. And of course, you know, I haven't even looked at the standings lately. I guess I should look those up. But the Indians, no question, are the team to beat in the American League Central. They have been for quite some time. But they suffered a huge setback yesterday. Their ace, Corey Kluber, he was hit by a baseball off the bat of Brian Anderson for Baltimore, hit him right on the forearm at 102 miles an hour. That was the velocity when the ball hit him, they projected, estimated. And so Kluber broke his throwing arm, basically, his forearm on his throwing arm. He, of course, has been an American League Cy Young Award winner before. He's the ace of Cleveland, and he's out indefinitely. So that's a big blow for the Indians. Right now, Minnesota leads the American League Central 18-10, and now they have the best record in the American League thanks to the Royals sweeping the Rays yesterday. And then Cleveland is 16-13, 2.5 back. The Royals are 8.5 out in last place. The Tigers and White Sox are 13-15. American League East, Tampa Bay has a 2-game lead over Tampa, or over New York, the Yankees. Red Sox have recovered somewhat from their bad start. They've moved up to 14-17. American League West, remember the Mariners were 13-2? They're now 5-13 in the last 18 games. They have fallen off. And Houston has a 1-game lead over Seattle in the American League West. In the National League East, Philadelphia with Bryce Harper leading the Braves by 2 games. The Cardinals had the best record in baseball right now. The Cardinals have a 3-game lead over the Cubs. Remember the Cubs got off to a really bad start? The Brewers are 4 games back. And in the NL West, the Dodgers have a 1-game lead over Arizona. And the Rockies, after a really rough start, are now 14-17, trying to claw their way back. And the San Diego Padres are just 2 games out of first in the National League West. So we'll continue to follow that. I mean, the Indians, they have had a lot of injuries with their starting rotation the last couple of years. Now you lose your ace. And you got to keep in mind, too, that their bullpen has aged a bit. Andrew Miller isn't what he once was. Their bullpen is one of the worst in baseball after being one of the best the year before. So the Indians, I do think, are coming close to a point where they're going to fall off big time. I think it's going to be a slide off the table kind of thing. And how could you not? They traded so many prospects to go for it, which was the right thing to do over those years. Blew a 3-1 lead against the Cubs in the World Series. They have to feel like they've got a curse now. And I don't know. I think it's going to be a while. They're going to have to, I think, rebuild again before really being a World Series contender. Because you think about all the wear and tear these guys go through in the playoffs. I mean, Kluber, of course, we know, was playing on 3 days rest multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
It catches up to you. It does. And we saw it with Kelvin Herrera, eventually caught up to him. Arm problems last year with the Nationals. We saw Greg Holland caught up to him. Tommy John surgery, which, by the way, he's doing a pretty good job with the D-backs now as their closer when it looked like his career was over last year. Wade Davis has had injuries here and there throughout his career. And so, you know, sometimes the shelf life of a top-notch reliever or even a top-notch starter is not very long. NBA playoffs, the Portland Trailblazers even their series against the Nuggets at a game apiece, winning in Denver to take over home court advantage.
Damian Lillard in the center court circle. He goes left, pulls up, long range, no good. Offensive rebound, C.J. McCollum steps back, three, yes sir! C.J. with the offensive board and the triple, and the Blazers back in front by 10.
Damian Lillard didn't even have a good game. Blazers still won. Great sign for them. Series tied 1-1. Only one game on the docket tonight. 7 o'clock on ESPN, the Toronto Raptors in Philadelphia take on the Sixers. That series tied at a game apiece. Can anyone knock off the Warriors? It looks like the Warriors have flipped the switch, which I think they've been waiting to do for quite some time. They're up 2-0 on the Rockets. Of course, the Rockets win games 3 and 4 at home. Then all of a sudden we'll say, oh boy, the Rockets can go back and win the series. But do you honestly believe anyone can beat the Warriors if they're healthy in a 7-game series?
No. I didn't at the start of this playoffs. I didn't either. Still don't. Mm-hmm.
I think the Celtics, I honestly think, and I've thought this for a long time, that if the Celtics are right, if they're right,
yeah,
they're the biggest challenger to the Warriors, if they're right. But they haven't been right all year long. And the Bucks, I just haven't felt like they're ready for this situation.
Yeah.
Although, you know, their series tied 1-1. That's, it could go still the Bucks' way. The Raptors, I think, are a team that give the Warriors some problems. But I just don't think they have enough firepower. And that's if the Raptors get through the next two rounds. So I agree with you. I think Golden State's going to win their third in a row and fourth in 5 years.
Yeah, because when I look at kind of matchups, and you kind of like go based on, you know, athletically versus athletically, that's why I always thought the Bucks might have a chance to be the best chance out of the East against Golden State because of what they can bring from that. They can bring that length, and they can, that athleticism kind of matches a little bit of what the Warriors do. I don't think there's another team that has that. Mm-hmm. Like, Boston's consistent when they get to this time of year, and I think that they could cause some problems in that area. Toronto's got Kawhi, and after that, you just kind of wonder who's going to show up and play for him. You know, you're not trusting Kyle Lowry at this time of the year, typically. So that's why I always thought the Bucks had the best chance out of the East. I don't think anybody in the West can do anything against the Warriors, to be completely honest with you. I mean, the Rockets had the best chance tonight. If they don't stop complaining and just start playing, it's not going to matter.
And they can't do anything to slow down Durant right now. So
yeah,
I agree with you. If they stay healthy, they're going to win it again, and that's kind of boring. But if you're a Warriors fan, it's awesome.
I am excited to at least see a different team in there from the East.
Yeah, it won't be the Cavs versus the Warriors again. Yeah, that at least we'll have something different. That's right, because the Cavs were mathematically eliminated the day that LeBron left. Right? Okay, some Chiefs notes. Derrick Johnson, remember just the other day, Jamal Charles signed a one-day contract to retire as a Chief, is the way it should be. He got a nice ceremonial handoff from Patrick Mahomes yesterday.
I saw that video, and I'm like, oh, what if they would have played together in their prime?
Oh, goodness gracious.
Oh, my God, I saw that, and I got giddy about, man, can we just, like, turn back the clock and, like, rework when these kids were born?
You know, you just have to wonder about Jamal Charles. He had a couple of serious ACL injuries, and if those wouldn't have happened, I think he could have been a Hall of Famer.
Oh, yeah.
Seth Kizer does stuff covering the Chiefs. He says that he should be considered for the Hall of Fame. I don't think Charles has enough to be in the Hall of Fame. Julian Edelman shouldn't be in the NFL Hall of Fame either, just because he has some good playoff numbers. There's no way he should be in the Hall of Fame. If he's in the Hall of Fame, we got to start opening up the door for a lot of other wide receivers.
If Julian Edelman makes it to the Hall of Fame, Jordy Nelson better make it.
I absolutely agree with you. I agree with you on that. But to me, Jordy Nelson's not a Hall of Famer statistically. Neither is Julian Edelman, and I don't think Jamal Charles is either. And I honestly, it would be great if they all got in if they deserve it. But if you're going to widen up the scope, then it's not really an exclusive club, is it?
No.
So people just get riled up when something recent, the recency bias, as I call it. So Derrick Johnson signs a one-year contract to retire as a Chief, and that's perfect. I mean, that's a guy that's been flat out a Chief, and you wonder what would have happened to Derrick Johnson in his prime. Played with Patrick Mahomes, because that was the thing. But Derrick Johnson, he never had that super great quarterback. You know, I mean, Trent Green was good. You know, he played Alex Smith good. And honestly, I'll say this: I don't think he ever had an unbelievably great defensive coordinator either. You know, you think back to the Chiefs days back in the '90s when their defenses were awesome. Derrick Johnson was never part of a great defense, but he was a linchpin in their defense. How bad would they have been without him? So it's great that he's going to be back.
Anybody would have tackled.
Exactly. Right. There's a reason he had led the Chiefs in tackles by a long ways for year after year. So Derrick Johnson, I remember when he was drafted, you know, everybody thought it was a great pick at the time. And then Todd Haley, basically he was benched, and Derrick Johnson was playing special teams. And people were like, why isn't Derrick Johnson playing? And he gets sporadic play, and he was kind of inconsistent. But eventually he blossomed into a great player. So yeah. Derrick Johnson can retire a Chief like he should. Did you hear about this story? This is crazy stuff. So I guess a TV station in Kansas City was doing a story about Patrick Mahomes' new house. Did you hear about this? This is unbelievable. I don't know how somebody can be this silly, or I want to say stupid and dumb. And that probably applies. And I hate to say the word stupid and dumb because I don't want to use it loosely. But I guess I need to just erase that and say irresponsible. Extremely irresponsible. But Patrick Mahomes recently bought a house. That was the news hit. On the surface, that's good news for Kansas City Chiefs fans. We all want our favorite quarterback or MVP, our face of the franchise, to make himself at home in the city. He's got national appeal. He could live anywhere and commute at the most important times. He could choose the mountains or the ocean or both. He could at least be closer to his Texas origins. He could buy a home in Texas and stay there and commute, get an apartment in Kansas City. Instead, he bought a home in KC. The news should have stopped there. A quick nod to the fact that Patrick Mahomes warms our hearts with pretty much everything he does, from wearing jorts to throwing no-look passes to his all-shucks demeanor. He's an elite performer on the field and a class act off of it, and we're lucky to have him. Unfortunately, KMBC in Kansas City, a local TV news station, decided to take things further the other night. They broadcast Mahomes' new address. What? 99% of us will do nothing with this information. We're civilized human beings who recognize that none of us would want our private information broadcast in such a way, and there's certainly no reason for any of us to take note of Mahomes' address. He has an address like anyone else, and it shouldn't be newsworthy. He has a right to privacy. That's where KMBC and I would disagree, says the writer at Arrowhead Addict. On Tuesday, the news station told viewers exactly where to find Mahomes' house, a reckless move that quickly drew the ire of viewers and would imagine Mahomes. They deserve every ounce of meanness they receive, the TV station. And it begins with Mahomes' own girlfriend, Brittany Matthews. Mahomes and Matthews quickly found plenty of defenders who agreed with them, other TV people themselves, saying, I could be wrong, but I've never seen a TV station, KMBC9, just let everyone know where a high-profile athlete lives. Patrick Mahomes deserves privacy. He moved from his last residence for this very reason. Bad idea. He cannot be happy. For people saying it's not a big deal that KMBC posted Patrick Mahomes' address because there are public records that have it, you're right, but you're still wrong. The media has a big audience, and there's no reason to publish his address. Other Twitter responses. Whoever aired out Mahomes' address at KMBC should be fired. I get Patrick Mahomes is a big deal right now, but let the kid be a kid for a minute. Not only did KMBC discuss the value of his new home, but they crossed the line in releasing his address. Have some respect. Tim Grunhard, former Chiefs center, who I think someday...
That's where I saw
yeah, that. Yeah, me too. And I think Grunhard at some point will be in the Chiefs' ring of honor. I think he should be. Brian Waters is going to go in. Will Shields has been in already. I mean, Grunhard was a fantastic center. He says, I can't believe that Channel 9 KMBC just talked about Patrick Mahomes' new house cost and gave out his address. That is totally irresponsible. Shame on you guys. Then you wonder why guys hesitate to stay here even now, even they know KC is such an awesome place to raise your kids. At the very least, KMBC owes Mahomes an apology or an explanation for their thought process. Here's hoping Mahomes knows most of us don't even want to know this information and that he's able to carve out some sense of privacy. Here's the thing about that. All it takes is one crazy person. One delusion fan. One stalker. And you know what? They could probably still find out that this information. But for a TV station or a radio station or any media outlet to put something out there like that, I don't know how anybody didn't think about, well, I wouldn't want my address out there. That's the golden rule! But people don't think before they put things on TV anymore, it seems like, or in the paper or on the radio.
Yeah. Let me say it's highly irresponsible.
Oh, no question.
And let me start with that. The person that said that this person should be fired should not be fired. These addresses are public record. You can find them if you really want to. So I don't think they should be fired. They should be reprimanded, probably.
I would say you'd be on that line. It depends on who made that decision.
Yeah.
You know? If somebody slipped up that's a lower person, they'll probably just fire him.
Yeah.
If it's somebody important to their operation, it'll probably be a reprimand or a suspension. But I'm kind of on the line there because you got to know better than that.
You do. Like I said,
you can't
totally
hide behind a public records finding
it. You can't do it.
Because then why don't we just go ahead and publish people's phone numbers while we're at it?
Yeah. I mean, what I'm saying is that if it is public record, I don't know if it's a fireable offense. If somebody can find it anyway without having to do a whole lot of research. You know, it's there. Like my address, people could go find it anytime they wanted. And I'm kind of, you know, we're in the public eye a little bit here.
Right.
And it's like, I don't really want people to be showing up at my place. And, you know, the news person would not want people to show up at their place, like you said.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you guys are in the public eye and there could be people out there that don't like something you said or did.
What if
your address out there and they know exactly where to find you.
I'm not saying Patrick Mahomes will do this. He won't. But what if Patrick Mahomes or his girlfriend decided, hey, we're going to find the addresses. Everybody that works at KMBC, and we're just going to put it out there on our Twitter feed, which they have millions of followers.
Oh, yeah.
Would they like that? Would
no.
KMBC people, employees like that? Of course not. So why in the world would you have thought that was okay?
Yeah.
Thus, I think it makes it a suspendable or fireable offense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, crazy stuff. I've never seen anything quite like that.
No, I haven't. I was like, wait, did that really happen?
When I first saw that tweet,
apparently
I'm like, did Grunhard actually see that correctly? He had to have misunderstood something. No, he didn't. Wow. Okay, the NHL playoffs continuing. You know, last year the story of the NHL playoffs were the Vegas Knights. The Vegas Golden Knights. First year expansion team, made all the way to Stanley Cup Finals. The story this year is the Carolina Hurricanes, who knocked out the defending Stanley Cup champions in seven games. And now the Islanders, who had all kinds of rest after a sweep, and Carolina had a grueling seven-game series. Advantage Islanders, right?
Not so much.
No. The Hurricanes lowering the boom. They're up 3-0 over the Islanders. They win last night.
Nino Niederreiter. Carolina back out there changing. So Niederreiter, a lone ranger, dumps it in. Leonard cut off by Aho. In front. They score! Justin Williams. And Carolina has a one-goal lead.
Carolina wins 5-2 over the Islanders. They lead that best-of-seven series 3-0. The Dallas Stars beat the St. Louis Blues last night 4-2. That's a series that's destined to go seven. It's tied 2-2. And then tonight, the Blue Jackets against the Bruins. Columbus leading that series 2-1. Remember, they knocked off the best team in hockey history during the regular season, Tampa Bay Lightning, in the first round and swept them. San Jose leading the Avs tonight at 9 o'clock in Colorado and Denver. Sharks lead 2-1. Avs will try to even that series. Other sports notes pass along to you. There's a report that Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard would consider joining the Brooklyn Nets. Everybody's talking about the Knicks over and over and over. Maybe they would consider the Nets. Also, Kentucky Derby favorite Omaha Beach has been scratched and was a pretty considerable favorite. So now suddenly it's wide open for the Kentucky Derby. So the horse has been scratched there. We were talking about the Chiefs. And there's some talk here about Mecole Hardman, who was drafted by the Chiefs in the second round. They moved up at the 56th overall pick to get him. He's a speedster out of Georgia. And there are odds out for who would be NFL Rookie of the Year. Kyler Murray, Dwayne Haskins, and somebody else. And then Mecole Hardman is fourth on the list in the odds to be
just
Rookie of the Year.
Quarterback.
Because he has a – exactly. If you had Alex Smith, this wouldn't even be considered.
No.
That's interesting, isn't it? Okay, there are some players that are still out there. I've heard a lot of people complain – not a lot of people, but some people complain. And I think it's a fair thing to at least bring up, is that probably the biggest need for the Chiefs, and I think you would agree – in fact, I know you would because we talked about it before the draft – is corner. Yes. They've got Jarvarius Ward and Rashawn Breeland would be their starting corners if the season started tomorrow. And they lost Steven Nelson, which I think is okay. But they don't have like a ton of experience at the cornerback position. The safety, they
Kendall
seem to be...
Kendall Fuller's still there.
Kendall Fuller, but he'll be a slot corner. Yeah. He really isn't the guy that plays on the outside.
Hope maybe he could just do that.
Well,
now.
Maybe, yeah. Hopefully. But and I think hopefully the new defensive scheme, they can move him around. But Fuller's more of a slot corner. At least he's had more success there. And he didn't have a great year last year.
No.
So you do have Kendall Fuller, but you really need more than that. Especially when it's been analyzed and critiqued and researched, and it doesn't shock me at all, especially the way the NFL is now, where it's a passing league, and you got guys throwing for 4,000 yards easily now, and, you know, guys throwing for 50 touchdowns like Patrick Mahomes and 5,000 yards, and you see Drew Brees throwing for 4,000 yards every year easily. Guys complete 70% of their passes. This is a passing league. The rules are designed to help the offense.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's so hard to play defense. And so it's all about offense, 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 offense. And so the next best – so we know that the most important position in the NFL is what?
Quarterback.
Quarterback. Do you know what the second most important position in the NFL, is behind a quarterback? Come on, man.
Defensive back?
Corner. Yeah, it's corner. Yeah. Come on, man. Don't even think about that one.
I just wanted to make suspense.
Oh, did you want to just add to the suspense?
I was acting like,
well done.
I was going to say corner right away, but I was okay. let's make an act like thinking about it.
Yeah, it's offensive guard. No, it's not. It's corner. Corner is the second most important position on the field, which means it's the most important position on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
And that's the position that the Chiefs addressed somewhat, but really went with a safety in Thornhill in the second round, although he can play some corner. And maybe that's what they're hoping, and maybe that's what we're overlooking. But having said all that, there are still some guys that are out there that are free agents that maybe the Chiefs will take a flyer on and bring in some kind of corner. You know, remember at the last moment, the guy Orlando Scandrick last year. Now, of course, he started out okay and then not so great, and there was a reason for it. Two teams had cut him loose, the Redskins and the Cowboys. But there is a guy that's still out there, and trust me, I'm not saying that the Chiefs do anything with this guy because they let him go. Eric Berry still doesn't have a team.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
I don't know if he's going to play.
First of all, I don't know.
This guy did not have surgery to fix a problem.
I don't. Yeah, he's not going to do anything. He got a second opinion. They said, hey, man, you know, you don't have to worry. You know, he's not going to have to do this procedure. I think as soon as the season's over, that's probably what we expected him to do. He didn't. And that might be an attributing factor to the Chiefs letting him go, too. It's like, listen, he addressing it, or we don't think it's going to get any better. So he is a guy that is available for some NFL team to take a flyer on. The thing is, how much money is Eric Berry actually going to get? Wouldn't you almost have, if you're an NFL team, how could you, I guess it's not guaranteed, but I don't know why you'd give him more than a one-year deal.
At the veteran league minimum.
A 1 year, $2 million, that's fine. The minimum, I think, is what? What is the minimum?
For the veteran, I think it's 1.2 or something like that.
Okay, so give him a 1 year, $2 million deal.
Maybe I could be wrong.
Or give him the minimum laced with incentives, that the more games you play, the more money you make. I don't see how anybody should sign him to a long-term deal at all, which he won't get. But I am thinking
this would be a one-year deal.
I don't think anybody should sign him to a two-year deal.
No, and I don't think they will. You know, they might do like a... Do they do options and stuff in the NFL or no? Like,
no, there's no pick up your options.
Like maybe if we could, you know, get you to commit for 2 years, but we'll sign you for one.
Team option. Yeah, that's baseball. No, they don't have that. Don't have that in NFL.
That's what you would do if you could.
Exactly. So Eric Berry's still out there. So if somebody wants him, they can grab him and then watch him sit on the sideline. And I like Eric Berry. Good person. It's just the injuries have ravaged his career, unfortunately, and I just don't see how you take a chance on a guy like that unless it's just all pretty much incentive-based.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, a guy's missed 14 games last year.
More than what the NFL requires you to give him and then let him earn the rest of it.
He's played three of the last 32 regular season games.
Yeah.
How do you give a guy a lot of money who's played three games in the last 2 years?
You don't.
Or 3 years, whatever it is, two and a half years.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man. So Eric Berry's still out there if somebody wants him. All right, anything else to add?
I think we covered it.
Are we going to set up a GoFundMe page to collect money for field turf for all the teams around here? Is that what we're going to do?
People would do it.
I think somebody would, too.
I had that option.
Yeah, I think you're right.